Color spectra.
Okay, so this is there are sort of patterns of a sort here and phenomena that that are in common with pattern formation, but basically this is a talk about turbulence. And maybe just to put you in the picture, because some of you may have heard a little bit about the story in 3D hydrodynamics turbulence. Roughly the picture is this. So this is the granddaddy, 3D hydrodynamics turbulence, high Reynolds, at high Reynolds numbers, is the granddaddy of turbulence. When people talk turbulence, they tend to mean this. But actually turbulence occurs in for many field theories, okay? There's lots of field theories with where you have forcing and damping that give rise to kind of the kind of turbulence that one sees in the hydrodynamic situation. So 3D hydro at high, large Reynolds number. Okay, this is to turbulence as convection is to pattern formation. It's sort of the granddaddy. So it's a, and the picture. It roughly is this. There are very few analytical results, almost none, okay? But the picture is this, and it was first suggested by Richardson and others, but Richardson mainly, and had this picture, and it was the following, that in some sense you stirred a fluid field, either by an instability or just direct stirring or shaking of some boundaries. And you did this at large scales. So this is wave number here. And so you put stuff in here at large scales. And then if the Reynolds number is big enough, you essentially take it out at very, very small scales, because the viscosity will only act when the derivatives get very large, namely when you have very high wave numbers, when you have very wiggly kind of motions. And in between, there's a sort of what they call an inertial range, or you could think of it as a window of transparency, that somehow the energy that gets put into the system here at large scales finds its way down through this window, okay, by some mechanism, and then gets dissipated at large scales. Okay, so this is a far from equilibrium many-body problem. Okay, it's not an isolated system. You have sources and sinks. Okay, and the kind of pattern was, well, you stirred, you got large eddies. Eddies were the kind of coin. They were the normal modes, as it were, that you thought of. Kind of swirling motions, vortices, and these vortices would interact due to the nonlinear terms, and essentially large vortices, in now we're talking three dimensions, would tend to on the average produce smaller ones, and the smaller ones would interact and produce even smaller ones, and so on down to viscosity. So via some nonlinear interactions, which were absolutely conservative, one carried the energy from the source to the sink. And one would like to describe that process. So you try to write down equations, and typically you write equations for velocity correlations at two different points. And basically his Fourier transform gives us the power spectrum. And his Fourier transform, if I write the total energy, I can write it as, say, E of k dk. I can write an equation for this, which is gotten just from the Navier-Stokes equations by writing down the time dependence of the two-point correlation. But because of nonlinearity, that'll be in terms of three-point correlations and so on. Okay, and then taking the Fourier transform. Okay, so one gets an equation like this, dEk by dt. Is whatever goes in, okay, that's from here. And then because these forces are conservative, I can write this is essentially the Fourier transform of a triple moment, okay, but I can write it as the gradient of a flux, because there's no energy loss due to these terms, and then I have an out. Okay. So now if one was to concentrate on, say, a little band here in the inertial range or in the window of transparency, then essentially I can ignore the ins and outs, okay? And I have a conservation of energy in this little band, okay? And just integrate this, I just get PA minus PB. Okay, now that sounds very trivial, okay? But actually, there's something now not so trivial, because this can be zero for two reasons, okay? Reason number one would be I could somehow, through some mechanism, block off any transmission through these walls. I could make this shell isolated from all other shells. That would be very hard to do in practice, but conceptually you can think of that. What would be the spectrum then? What would happen if I just started with energy in a shell? Well, and it can't get out, it's an isolated system, it would relax to some kind of equilibrium distribution, thermodynamic distribution, the equipartition of energy. Okay? But that's there, so the usual solutions, the measures, the invariant measures, are the solutions that are reached by hydrodynamic systems and turbulent systems are absolutely not of this nature, okay? Because we're not isolated, okay? We're zero, not because PA and PB are both zero, but because they're equal, okay? Okay, equals some constant. Now there's a totally different behavior. Whereas the system, isolated system, would relax to some kind of equipartition, okay, measure. The finite flux situation relaxes to another kind of distribution altogether. And it's known as the Kolmogorov distribution, or the Kolmogorov spectrum. Okay? And in fact, it's k to the minus 5/3 times p to the 2/3. This you can find simply by a little dimensional analysis. Okay? And actually, Kolmogorov put his mathematical stamp on this picture. Absolutely no dynamics, but absolutely brilliant kinematics. He argued that sort of the structure functions, like if you take velocity differences and average them, okay? You can think of averages here, not as ensemble averages, but averages over the base point x, okay? Because we have a translational invariance, okay? Kolmogorov argued that such averages in the limit of high Reynolds number, that in some sense, turbulence, if it got kind of homogeneous and isotropic enough, it would restore, in a statistical sense, all the symmetries that the original system had. Only in a statistical sense. So he argued that objects like this would only depend upon two things, namely this very important flux of energy from the sources to the sinks, okay, because energy is the only conserved quantity, so it's the flux of that conserved quantity. It would depend upon P, and it would depend upon the separation distance R. And just a very simple dimensional analysis tells you that has to be N over 3, okay, because this is dimensions L squared over T squared, the time derivative of that, so L squared over T cubed. This is dimensions L, so L cubed over T cubed, and N over 3, this is L over T to the N. Okay, now, this is extraordinarily good in 3D hydrodynamic turbulence. This corresponds to, for N equals 2, a very simple calculation gives you absolutely that equivalence. There is an exact result, okay? It's not an exact result at all. This isn't. It's just consistent. But there is an exact, one exact dynamics result, which is this. Cubed, okay? It goes like 4/5 PR. That's actually exact. That's one of the, in fact, that is the only exact result you can get from 3D hydrodynamics. It's the Obukhov, is that Obukhov? Kolmogorov? I forget whether it's Kolmogorov. Anyway, it's called the 4/5 law because 4/5, unlike usually when they say 4/5 laws, the 4/5 is an exponent, but here it's just a coefficient. Okay, so this is an exact result, but all the other moments, there are no exact results. There's just this Kolmogorov argument. And it's, sorry? The P is the flux. That's the finite flux. R is the separation at the two points. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so all the other higher moments, actually it turns out when you do experiments, even though the low order moments seem to be very well described by a Kolmogorov picture, the higher order moments simply are not. And things go like r to the zeta n, where zeta n is actually less than n over 3. Okay, so this essentially means that if I divide it, like the nth order moment, by the n over 2 product of the second order moment, this would go to infinity as r goes to 0. Okay, so somehow at very, very small scales, high order moments are actually very important. Okay, and do not fit the Kolmogorov, the 41 Kolmogorov picture, this simple picture. Okay, these anomalies, okay, are called intermittency, or given that name. Why? Because when you get interesting high-order moments, it's usually because you have a signal which is sort of nice and maybe Gaussian like that, and then every so often you get a big rare event like that. And it's when you take the higher-order moments that you really see the rare events. Okay, they get amplified by taking multiple powers. Okay, but it's on this I want to focus. And the question is, how does that get set up? Okay, it's practically measured in all contexts that we know of. Like, it was first measured by Stewart and a colleague up in the Puget Sound, where the Reynolds numbers were 10 million. So it's been measured in the solar wind. It's measured all over the place, the k to the minus 5/3 spectrum. Okay? So it's definitely there, but how does it get set up? I mean, one has the following situation. I mean, let's say that I tell you that we stir the fluid, and that's the initial spectrum.
Not exact.
My
first is not exact.
It's almost exact. I mean, in the inertia, in over a very wide range of wave numbers, many, many decades. Yeah. I mean, the spectrum will look, it'll have some signature of where the energy is put in, and then you'll have a k to the minus 5/3, and then you'll have an exponentially decaying spectrum here. So over many decades, the k to the minus 5/3. Yeah. Well, it depends on the Reynolds. Depends on the Reynolds number. So the question is, how does that guy get set up? Okay. And so one suggestion is, okay, well, what will happen is essentially it'll get set up like a front, like this. So this front will travel off to infinity, okay, and leaving behind it the k to the minus 5/3 spectrum. That's a reasonable suggestion. I believe that's wrong. Okay? It's never been measured. In fact, the question, as far as I know, has really never been asked. Okay? But I'm going to tell you about turbulence in another context where we can actually do real analysis. Okay? And I'm going to show you that it's unlikely that the k to the minus 5/3 is achieved in this way. There's one thing I want to point out to you. Very simple calculation. Let's ask, how much energy can I store? Okay, that's the EK, EK, DK. How much energy can I store under the Kolmogorov spectrum? Okay, so I go from some where it gets non-universal back here, so I won't worry about that. Okay, so I really only want to know, is that finite or infinite? Well, it's finite. Right?
That's d3k.
This is k to the minus 5/3, dk.
That's
yeah?
dk.
Yeah, yeah.
It's defined to be
the energy, yeah. It's what I've done is I've taken the Fourier transform of the two-point correlation and angle averaged. Okay? Okay, so this is convergent. Now that says a huge amount. Think of it. What's the game? We're pumping this at a constant rate. Okay? The k to the minus 5/3 spectrum can only harbor a finite amount of energy. So what's got to happen? Yes, this has got to get to infinity pretty damn fast. Okay? So the first thing that's going to happen is that this is going to go to infinity like something like t star minus t to a power. That's not new. People expected that. Okay? Yes?
Finite, you also still get the symmetry in the correlation function. You only have the function x.
We should look at all components. We should look at this u and I, uj, and we should look at this, the vectors, and then we find that this will be some rij of r, and because it's isotropic, I can express a tensor which is isotropic in terms of actually two scalars, and those two scalars get connected.
And so it doesn't require time to become isotropic?
It will, of course, yes. Yes. So this is after we mix and it starts to relax. Yes. Yes. Sometimes it takes quite a long time because often the mixing can be fairly non-isotropic. But at these scales, at these inertial scales, things get to be isotropic very quickly.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, experimentally, that's not verified.
No, no.
There's definitely a weak on isotropy almost in any flow.
Yes, yes.
At any Reynolds number.
Yes, but the fact...
It will go away, the anisotropy. In addition, the flow is not homogeneous either.
Well, yes,
so,
but you...
So there are some assumptions here that are not experimentally not borne out yet.
That's true. Well, that's not... I wouldn't agree with that, but I'm not going to argue with you now. We can argue a little bit later. I would claim, like, for the fact that you see the Kolmogorov spectrum over large ranges at fairly small scales means that the small scales are isotropic.
There are weak effects.
Yeah, there may be weak effects, yeah. And in fact, in the examples I'm going to show you, there certainly are non-isotropies present. Okay, so now, so this has got to get to infinity fast, and what's going to happen? This gets to infinity, and now I've got to create a constant leakage. In other words, the Euler equations fail to conserve energy after T star. Okay? So a consequence of the fact that the Kolmogorov spectrum... We're assuming that the Kolmogorov spectrum is the attractor, like that's the solution that gets reached. We're pretty sure that that's the case. But since it only can contain a finite amount of energy, and assuming that the energy can't get clogged up at large scales, which is a possibility, but assuming that that doesn't happen, then the energy has to find a short circuit to infinity. So in fact, Onsager knew this. In the late 40s, he showed that the conservation of energy for the Euler equations was simply a formal conservation law, which may indeed fail after a certain time. Okay. All right. So we call this, by the way, finite capacity Kolmogorov spectrum. Okay. So that's the picture in hydrodynamics, and I can't tell you anything more about that. Okay, other than just to make these conjectures. What I can tell you about is another kind of turbulence that occurs with waves. And the picture I want you to think about The picture I want you to think about is waves on the surface of the sea. Okay, we stir the sea. Okay, we keep stirring it. And for now, we'll think we're stirring it at large scales. In fact, the usual stir of the sea, the wind actually puts in energy over quite a broad band. But basically, we'll think it's going in at large scales. And what we're going to ask is, supposing I take the equations for water waves, and I Fourier transform them, okay, I'll get something like this. S's are just sines, plus or minus, waves going left and right. I'll get some equations like this. These are coupling coefficients. This is just a nonlinear convolution. Delta 1, 2, 3, 0 is just the delta function, delta k1 plus k2 plus k3 equals k. This is just a convolution. Now, there should be quadratic terms, but I'm just going to assume there are no non-trivial three-wave interactions, no three-wave resonances. And for gravity waves, that's the case. For capillary waves, that's not the case. But we're going to talk about gravity waves. And then by a Birkhoff transformation, I can take out the quadratic terms. Okay? All right, so I have, these are the original equations, just written in Fourier variables. Okay? Now the objects I'm interested in are averages of these guys. And this is because of spatial homogeneity. This is just a delta function correlated times a good smooth function. This is called the number density, particle number. Okay? The number of waves at wave number k. And I'm going to forget the s. I'm going to be interested when s is minus s, and I don't care whether it's plus minus or minus plus. Okay? Now, wave turbulence, because it has a small parameter, namely the slope of the waves, actually has a natural asymptotic closure. Okay? The problem, if you write down the moment equations of hydrodynamics, the time rate of change of the second order moment is given in terms of third, fourth, etc., etc. No natural closure. For dispersive wave systems, okay, there is an asymptotic closure. Asymptotic meaning over long times, like 1 over epsilon to the fourth in this case. Okay. Now, I'm not going to go into that today because that's a whole other story, but I'm going to write down what the closure is. It's because of the dispersion. Basically, what happens is this. The waves, you start with a sea. It doesn't have to be joint Gaussian or anything like that, okay? But basically, if you think of the linear propagation, what's that going to do? In physical space, if you think at one point in the ocean, after a long time, its elevation is going to consist of a bit of from a wave that came from over here, and over here, and over here, and over here. So, roughly by the central limit theorem, it's going to go to Gaussian. So, the linear dynamics of dispersive wave systems brings the system close to Gaussian, but then the nonlinearity builds it back up. But it builds it back up in a very special way. The non-Gaussianity can be expressed in terms of products of the NKs. Okay? So, you get this natural closure. I mean, it's a lovely story. And it's a
nonlinear interaction between waves, which is in the first line,
here, yeah.
Is that this epsilon has to do with the dispersion relation?
No, no. The dispersion relation is here. This omega k would be, say, k to the alpha. For water waves, it would be k to the half.
But the vertex for two waves,
right,
it's a separate parameter.
Why is it small? Because the wave slope on the average is small. The wave slope is small. If you go out to the sea, the wave slope on the average is much less than a tenth. Average wave slope out in the ocean.
A tenth of what?
It's well, a slope is like this distance, the amplitude divided by the wavelength. The slope.
The height.
Yes. The slopes of the waves are...
The shallow waves.
So they're nearly linear waves.
Yeah. But they interact non-linearly and seriously non-linearly, but it takes them a long time.
Right.
Okay. And that they exchange energy, so the energy density is just simply omega k times the number density. Okay? And the equation you get for this is dnk by dt. Okay, now I'm just going to write it roughly, is L squared, the product of four n's like this. It's actually sums of products of three n's, but I'm going to write it like this. It's like a Boltzmann equation. It's like the kinetic equation, yeah. Okay? So that's it. And then all the higher order moments are slaved to nk. Okay? Now, this guy, first of all, you can see a couple of possible equilibrium solutions. One equilibrium solution is nk.
One might think that as this is supposed to work for large
t,
right?
No, it's not particularly small omega. It's
no, large t.
For large time t.
Right.
Yeah. That's
so one might think that as time goes on, you can't neglect the higher correlation. You assert
right.
that you can.
No, I prove it.
Yeah, so that's... It's just self-consistent.
Yes. I mean, there are corrections to this at epsilon 6 and epsilon 8,
yeah,
etc.
But there are no denominators.
There's no denominators. The small denominators give rise to these resonances.
And that's it.
That's it.
And beyond that, there are no others.
Well, there are small denominators, but these corrections can be calculated. Some of them have delta functions like this. Some of them have principal values, and some of them are gradients. Some of them involve gradients of the n's, like.
The point is that there isn't a builder.
No.
That's what you verify.
That's what I verify. That's what I check. I'm going to tell you there's a quirk to the story that makes it very interesting now in a minute, okay? So bear with me, all right? First thing I want you to notice is, what is the mechanism for energy exchange? It's four-wave resonances. You have K and K1 coming in together, and K2 and K3 going out. They conserve momentum, K1 plus K, K2 plus K3. And they conserve energy, omega plus omega 1 is omega 2 plus omega 3. Okay? So the mechanism for energy exchange is four-wave resonances. Second observation, what are some obvious solutions? If you want the stationary solution, put this equal to 0. Well, one of them is nk is constant. Right? That's equipartition of wave action. It turns out that the number of particles is also conserved by this equation. Okay? So the number of waves. So there's two conservation laws now, number of waves and total energy. Okay? Also, if I make nk to be 1 over omega, call it temperature over omega, then I get omega plus omega k1 minus omega k2 minus omega k3, and that is 0. Okay? So the obvious thermodynamic solutions, the equipartition solutions, okay, are there. They're part of the package. But they're not the interesting solutions. Now, to show you the interesting solutions, what I'm going to do is make an approximation to this. I'm going to make an approximation where essentially the interactions are very local. Okay? The main, in k-space, the main feed to omega at wave vector k is from the neighborhood of the wave vector k. Now that's a little bit of a leap, it's not always true, but what I'm going to tell you is true whether or not you use this approximation. And what I can do is I angle average, so I'm going to define a new number density with respect to frequency. I'm going to angle average this equation, okay, and I'm going to express everything as a function of omega rather than k, because omega is related to k just by the absolute value of k to the alpha. In the gravity wave case, it's root k, like it's k to the half. So then I get a very nice equation. I get dn omega by dt is something which depends upon nk expressed as a function of omega. And if I assume locality, I can write it this way. N to the fourth, d2 by the omega squared of 1 over n. Now, I've got to tell you what things are, okay? This is just a pure constant. It's just an integral, which you can calculate. The x naught is an important variable. X naught is 2 gamma 3 over 3 alpha plus d over alpha. Okay? Now, what is gamma 3? What is d? I've already told you what alpha is. Okay? Let me remind you again. Alpha is the degree of homogeneity of the dispersion relation. Omega behaves like k to the alpha. So omega at lambda k is lambda to the alpha times omega to the k. Okay? The degree of homogeneity of this guy we'll call gamma 3. So this guy behaves like, so if I take L of lambda k, lambda k1, lambda k2, lambda k3, that'll behave like lambda to the gamma 3 times L of k, k1, k2, k3. Okay? So this is part of, I'm assuming that there's a scaling symmetry, okay, in this equation. Actually, that's not necessary, okay, but for convenience, I'm going to assume it just for the story today, okay? All right, now, this is lovely. This is absolutely beautiful. What? D is the dimension, sorry, D is the dimension of K. So K has dimension D. So for water waves, it's two. It's the two dimensions on the surface of the sea. Okay, now I'm going to write this as just D2K by d omega squared. So dn omega by dt is D2K by d omega squared. Okay? Now I can write dn omega by dt as dq by d omega. Okay, so q is dk by d omega. If I write it that way, dn omega by dt is dq by d omega, what does q mean? Q is the flux of particles. Okay? And it's measured positive, moving from small scales to large scales. I've chosen the sign to be this. Okay? I can also write, if I multiply this by omega, d omega n omega by dt, okay, multiply this by omega, write it as a gradient, this would be minus dp by d omega, where p is the energy flux. It's k minus omega dk by d omega. Okay? Now there's also another quantity which is very interesting and very tantalizing. You can also introduce the notion of entropy doesn't mean much in these contexts because the solutions nk that we evolve to essentially don't allow the normal entropy, which in this case, because waves are like bosons, this isn't really well defined. But its d by dt is, okay? It's d by dt, its entropy production is well defined. And in fact, if I write this as d by dt of 1 over nk, dn omega by dt, d omega, then I call this sorry, the db dt is, goes in. I'll call this ds omega by dt. And I can write ds omega by dt. So this is the entropy density as a flux and a bulk term. It's very easy to calculate this. Okay? The T, for instance, the R here is just 1 over N dk by d omega. Sorry, it's minus that, plus k times d by d omega of 1 over N. And the T is omega to the 3x naught plus 2, N to the 4th, d2 by d omega squared of 1 over N, all squared. Positive definite. So if I have no flux of entropy, entropy increases, okay, until we reach a zero of this. Okay? Now this is great. This is an actual statement of entropy production for a non-equilibrium system. Okay?
Can I stop you for a second? I
mean, you certainly
where,
can.
Where everything simplified is when you took this integral differential equation
right.
and turned it into a differential.
Right. But I can... I can define everything,
right.
even though I stay in this.
Right.
So.
So this is, but it's because you are, but still you are able to define quantities as integrals,
mm-hmm.
which turn this thing into differential equations. I mean, is that what? Makes the thing simple. I mean, that you have these sort of macroscopic, these Q's, K's, S's, R's, T's.
No. The R's, T's, Q's, P's are all defined whether or not I make this approximation.
Right.
This is a teaching tool.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
But in the end,
yeah.
you are able, whether you do it by this
that way,
method or by
yeah.
without it, you are able
to define
these constants of the
motion. Absolutely.
And
okay. Now the flux isn't necessarily isn't a constant of the motion yet. Okay.
Well,
you'll see it.
Macroscopic variables.
Well, yes, macroscopic variables. Now you're going to see, because now let me ask, what are the stationary solutions? Okay. Now it's real easy, isn't it? It's k equals omega times a constant plus another constant. D 2k by d omega squared is zero. Okay? But I know dk by d omega is q, so it's omega q plus p. You can check that p is k minus omega dk by d omega. So the two constants, okay, now come into my equation for the stationary state. So this is an equation for omega 3x naught plus 2, n to the fourth, d2 by d omega squared, of 1 over n equals q omega plus p. Solve the second order equation. Okay? Let's take q and p zero for the moment. What is the solution going to be? Okay? If this is zero and this is zero, the solution is 1 over n equals, I'll write it as 1 over t omega plus mu. This is Rayleigh genes. Okay? This is sort of the temperature. This is the chemical potential. This sort of goes with the fact that you've conserved energy. This goes with the fact that you've conserved wave action, or number of particles. So the general solution, you see, the general state of the system will relax to a state which will be nk, will be some function of omega, t, mu, four-parameter state. Two parameters corresponding to the two conserved quantities and two fluxes. Okay? So these are the general solutions. These are the, and they all will have finite fluxes. As long as P and Q aren't zero, they will have finite fluxes. And in general, we won't have a situation where we just have energy flux and no particle flux, or particle flux and no energy flux. In general, it'll be a solution like that. However, there are simplifications. You can ask, and you can show that this is a good approximation. You can ask, are there solutions where Q is zero? Okay? And P isn't zero. All right? Well, it's very easy. Just a little calculation now. So let's calculate that. So I'll let n be c omega to the minus x. Okay? Plug it in. So I get omega to the 3x naught plus 2, c cubed, c to the 4th, and then a c from here. I'm going to get omega to the minus 3x minus 2 times x minus 1, and that's got to be p. Okay? Therefore, what's the x? X has got to be x naught. Okay? And the constant in front, the Kolmogorov constant, is p over x naught times x naught minus 1 to the third. Okay? So now, this is the pure energy flux Kolmogorov spectrum. This describes, we put energy into the ocean here, it describes how it goes down to smaller and smaller scales. Okay? What is it for the ocean wave case? Q is zero.
So that means there's no particles.
There's no particles, okay? Now you
only energy.
Only energy flux. Now you think, no, they're all. Well, it depends. This is semantics now. What do you call Kolmogorov? I call Kolmogorov solutions any solution with finite flux, because this was his key.
Finite energy flux.
Well, in Kolmogorov's case, finite energy flux, but any flux. I mean, in later on, Bob Creighton and Zakharov discovered inverse fluxes, and so any flux. But the key point, the key insight of Kolmogorov was that he understood that non-equilibrium systems, you had to have a flow of conserved quantities between sources and sinks.
That's why it's not just 1 over n, it's 1 over t. That's only for when Q and P are zero.
That's right.
And the non-equilibrium is Q and or P are zero. New thing.
This is the new thing. So these, you might say, how does this work? Because we wrote it down. Where's the energy density? The energy density is omega knk. But it's like this. I put energy in here. Okay, so I put particles in here with some omega, omega naught, n naught. Now, if the dissipation range is so far away, conservation of energy is omega naught, n naught, is omega d, nd. But if omega d is much greater than omega 0, then n 0 is much less than, much greater than nd. So it requires very few particles to carry a lot of energy. There's a lovely sociological analogy. You get a lot of guys come into the world with $100 each. Say 100 guys with $100. And what happens? Now, we've two conservations here. We've conservation of people and conservation of money. And they play cards. They interact, okay? They interact, okay? And invariably what happens is some guys end up with all the money, so they go to the high-frequency end of the spectrum, out to the suburbs, and the rest of us, you see, get poorer and poorer. We drift back to omega equals zero. So that analogy is absolutely precise. So a rightward flux of money corresponds to, has to be accompanied by an inverse flux of particles. And that's what happens in the sea and in optics and, you know, lots of situations. Okay, so we have this pure Kolmogorov spectrum. In general, the solutions will be depend upon many parameters, but in certain limits, this is a very good spectrum, and it seems to be in the sea. For water waves, the gamma 3 is 3, alpha is a half, so twice 3 over 3, that's 2, plus d is 2, 2 plus 2 over a half is 8, so the x naught is 8, okay? This corresponds to a spectrum if you look at the ocean wave surface, eta k squared will go like k to the minus 7/2. A sharp crested ocean like this will be k to the minus 4. Okay? A sharp crested ocean will be k to the minus 4. You can see that because k times eta k is the Fourier transform of the derivative of the surface. Okay? And if that goes like 1 over k squared, if k eta k goes like 1 over k squared, then k eta k essentially shocks. Okay? So you have discontinuities in derivative. So these guys are worse than that. They're slightly cuspy. Okay? So you will have a fractal surface which is slightly cuspy. Okay? So now our story, how is that achieved? And so let's now look at the capacity in the ocean case. Okay? Let's look at what we want to look at. Omega times n omega. N omega is omega to the d over alpha minus 1 times nk, which is p to the third times omega to the minus x naught, which is 2 gamma 3 over 3 alpha minus d over alpha, d omega. So that's the total amount of energy. That's omega nk dk, or omega, capital N omega d omega. That cancels with that, that with that. So this will converge, you see, this will be less than infinity if 2 gamma 3 is greater than 3 alpha, which it is for ocean waves. 2 times 3 is greater than 3 times a half. Okay? So ocean waves have finite energy capacity. Okay? Now, for waves of optical waves of diffraction, this guy actually is zero. Because basically, for optical waves of diffraction, this is the Fourier transform of the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. So the L is essentially constant. So the gamma 3 is 0, and the alpha is 2, okay? Because it's del squared. Okay, so it's diffraction. So in that, for optical waves, you have infinite capacity, okay? So now we're going to ask, in the finite capacity and infinite capacity cases, how is this Kolmogorov spectrum achieved? Okay. Now, before I do that, are there any questions?
Could you explain what the excitation is? In other words, what's the equivalent of the Reynolds
number? The Reynolds number here. The Reynolds number has two connotations. You can think of it as the excitation measured in units of the viscosity.
The size of the inertia.
Here, I haven't told you anything about how it's input and how it's output. Let's talk water waves, okay? What's going to happen in water waves? Where is the regularization going to occur at small scales? Okay? The first regularization will occur at the centimeter level because surface tension will come into play. And so you'll have gravity capillary waves. Then at the millimeter level, actually, there'll be viscosity. Okay?
So this description has been for infinite Reynolds number because you haven't.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's right. I will introduce that in a minute. I won't introduce it today.
That's why you went to infinity.
Yes.
It's because this is.
I'm pushing back the surface tension.
Right. So this is a description at infinite Reynolds.
Yes. Effectively infinite Reynolds number.
Because you're neglecting dissipation.
I'm neglecting regularization, dissipation, surface tension, whatever comes into play.
Well, you said it was.
Well, this is where there's a bit of a cheat, and I have
because
to.
It's on the spectrum.
It's actually, you put the way wind puts energy into waves, actually at quite small scales as well as moderate scales, and so it's quite broad. But it doesn't affect things very much. The spectrum is changed very little. But so, for the sake of thinking about it, I want you to think that the energy goes in at large scales. That's this. Now, actually, just a caveat now, an aside. I mean, this is absolutely lovely stuff because it's very non-trivial wave turbulence because it becomes fully non-linear. If the Kolmogorov spectrum, this guy here, this X, okay, if that does not inherit the symmetries of our original primitive equations, wave turbulence will always break down at very small scales or very large scales. In other words, if I look at the ratios, you see, I can, how am I going to solve this? I'm solving this by truncating this equation at epsilon 4, finding what the equilibrium solution is in that case, and then hoping that these terms remain small. Okay? Absolutely. I knew you were after me on that. And the thing is, they don't. The ratios of these will go like the following. P to the third, k to the gamma 3 over 3 minus alpha, times epsilon to the fourth. Okay? That's epsilon squared, yeah.
That's the ratio of the epsilon 6 terms.
That's right. So, when gamma 3 is greater than 3 alpha, now finite capacity is gamma 3 is greater than 3 halves alpha, when that's greater than that, no matter how small this will always fail.
At large k,
yes. And fully nonlinear things happen there. You get absolutely intermittent behavior. So wave turbulence is extraordinarily rich because it has regions in which the wave turbulence solution is good, but then you have bands where it fails. So it's not at all unlike, in fact, it's very like real turbulence. Real turbulence, the objects, the intermittent objects, are not at all well understood. We call them tornadoes or reconnections or things like that. But in wave turbulence, actually, we understand quite a bit about these collapses, where they come from, and you know what nonlinear objects play a role. So what happens is the wave turbulence starts off and is absolutely valid. But as it develops its equilibrium solution, it evolves dynamically so as to excite fully nonlinear structures. Okay? And these then give you intermittent and anomalous corrections to higher order moments. Okay? So, you know, so really all turbulence and wave turbulence is like a two species gas. Okay? You have eddies, or in our case, waves, which behave as if they're almost Gaussian. Not quite, but almost Gaussian. And then you have intermittent structures occurring, which are distributed in some Poisson distribution. Okay? So, anyway, so but that's another story. That's another story. Now, the story I want to tell you today is how is this achieved? And it'll take me just about 10 minutes, and then I'll stop. Because it's very pretty. It's okay. So, how would this spectrum be achieved? Well, the first thing we did was we had equations like this. Actually, we discovered this in the magnetohydrodynamics context, and it was Sergei Nazarenko and Gaultier, Sebastian Gaultier, and Annette Pouquet. And what we did was we just took the kinetic equation and integrated from some initial state. And we got this beautiful k to the minus 7/3 spectrum. But that wasn't the Kolmogorov spectrum. This is MHD.
Where the same thing gives 7/2 becomes 7/3?
Nope. Nope. No, nothing to do, that's actually not what it is. The 7/2 here was actually k to the minus 2. The Kolmogorov spectrum should have been k to the minus 2. So what we discovered was this. It seemed to prefer k to the minus 7/3 in its development. This thing goes to infinity in finite time, and you can calculate the rate at which it goes to infinity. Okay.
By infinity, you mean this is infinite Reynolds
number. Infinite Reynolds number, and numerically it means where you cut off resolution. Okay. Once it reached the end of its resolution, okay, then the Kolmogorov spectrum builds back up from infinity, like that. So the Kolmogorov spectrum in finite capacity cases. In infinite capacity, it builds up the way I told you before. In other words, in infinite capacity cases, I can accept an infinite amount of energy here. So the front doesn't have to go to infinity in finite time. It just trundles. It goes off to infinity. The front goes like t to the b, where the b is positive. Okay? And it leaves behind it, in its wake, the exact Kolmogorov spectrum. Okay, for finite capacity cases, it goes steeper than the Kolmogorov spectrum, and when you get to infinity, it builds back up like that.
So there's an order of limits between r going to infinity and t going to infinity.
Right. What we've said is essentially r going to infinity first, and then. Well, we've said r to be finite.
That's the point.
Finite but large.
As r.
Yes. This is cut off as r. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And but that when I told Uriel Frisch about this, and he said that they had spotted something similar when they were doing Berger's equation. So anyway, sorry. But he hadn't said anything about it. But it's but so this is very interesting. It means the Kolmogorov spectrum actually comes from infinity, not from the forcing range. I mean, if this is all true, and it's true in all the cases we've looked at. So how does one?
It hasn't been done in ordinary terms.
No, I've asked lots of people. You should ask Steve Orszag or. Ask various people. I asked actually.
You think it would be relatively easy to do in simulations? No.
You would in simulations, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I asked. No, decaying curve. This is
if
different.
They do that. Why can't they?
Yes,
do this?
They could do it. You have to keep forcing this to maintain that solution.
Yeah.
What's the chap who went off to Trieste? My memory's gone. Srinivasan. Yeah, I asked him about all this.
Oh, yeah, no, but in experiments, probably a lot more different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but I agree. In simulations, they should be able to see this. Okay, so roughly, how does one get the picture? Okay, so what we look for is of the full collision integral R, this equation here, we look for self-similar solutions. Nk is omega star to the minus x. It's a function of t. And it's a function of eta, which is omega over omega star t. Okay. You shove this in the equation. Okay. You shove this in the equation. And you get, then by getting rid of all the t's, you find that omega star has to go like in the infinite capacity case, it goes like t to the b, where b is 1 over 2 x minus x naught minus 2 gamma 3 minus 3 alpha over 3 alpha. Okay, and the x is x naught. This x turns out to be x naught, so this goes away, and this is just 3 alpha over 3 alpha minus 2 gamma 3. Okay, the reason we can get both the x and the b in this case, in the infinite capacity case, is in the infinite capacity case you have another bit of information. You know that the total amount of energy under this solution grows like t. Okay, that gives you another equation between x and b, and that allows you to determine both b and x precisely. There is no second relation when you have finite capacity. So you have a nonlinear eigenvalue problem. Okay? You have a nonlinear eigenvalue problem. You have this relation that b is 1 over 2 x minus x naught minus 2 gamma 3 minus 3 alpha over 3 alpha. Now, you know this b now has to be negative. Okay? So you know that x minus x naught has to be less than 2 gamma 3 minus 3 alpha over 6 alpha. Now, from looking at positivity of entropy production is zero on this bulk entropy production is zero on the pure thermodynamic solutions. Okay? But if you combine this with the minus dr by d omega, that becomes zero on the Kolmogorov solution. Okay? All right? So you have to have x greater than x naught in order to produce positive entropy. Okay, now we've come up with an argument which is like a marginal stability argument. Okay? What we say is we look at the front. Okay? And by looking at this ordinary differential equation in eta, you can show that near the front, this thing goes like omega star minus omega to the 3 halves. So it's like a nonlinear diffusion equation where there's a front between a zero state and behind it some state. Okay? So this 3 halves, so that you can show. And then by looking essentially at the energy balance in the tip, we argue that it actually has to be halfway between. So it's exactly halfway between these two limits. So x is x naught plus 2 gamma 3 minus 3 alpha over 12 alpha. And I don't think that's quite right. I think that's an asymptotic expansion myself, because there are higher order terms that we didn't take account of. So I think that's an asymptotic expansion when you're close to the finite capacity cutoff. Okay? But in any event, what is certainly true is that the x in the finite capacity cases is greater than the Kolmogorov value. Okay? And that's very important, because it turns out that if you look at entropy production, the entropy production in the tip is marginally divergent for this 3 halves. It's very fascinating. Which I don't quite understand. But I think that's, you know, the entropy production is sort of maximized with this front. Okay, so the message is that in finite capacity cases, Kolmogorov spectra are achieved by having a steeper than Kolmogorov spectrum until you get the leakage at infinity, until the short circuit to infinity is established, and then the Kolmogorov spectrum builds back up from infinity. And that's the story. Good.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Let me see.
Can I understand it?
What are you doing? You want to drop a brick into the sea?
No, I'm just pouring the water from the bottom.
Yeah.
The
oh.
So I started pouring it.
Yeah.
There's no way from
the
gradient.
Yeah.
So will I have a similar feature?
No. But that's a very interesting problem.
This is the surface of water?
Yes. What he's talking about is, okay, so now look down on the board, and the water comes down here. Now, what it'll do, it'll move out supersonically, you see, because it's shallow water flow. So it's sort of completely different from, okay. So then, as it goes out, it'll go through a jump, okay, a shock, okay. and then the water level will get bigger. So you've all seen this. Yeah, so it's a hydraulic jump. So it's quite a bit different. But what's not different is you do set up front, and actually the front becomes stationary depending upon the speed at which you're running the tap.
So how should I look at this? You know, you say the spectrum. If I have a wind tunnel.
Yeah.
And I set up turbulence.
Yeah.
First start, I put in energy, and at the large scale.
Yeah.
And then I go far enough down until I find the K to the factor spectrum, and then I say I'm in the region where the turbulence is fully developed.
Yeah.
So everybody that measured wind turbulence must mm-hmm. have measured the spectrum higher up.
Mm-hmm.
It should have seen what the spectrum mm-hmm. looks like. So mm-hmm. I will ask, is that the same? I mean, should they see high, you know, of course when you're very close to the grid, you shouldn't see very much. But the question is, how does the spectrum change when you move closer and closer to the grid?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. I mean, it's certainly, you could sort of think of it that this way. I mean, here's your mesh, and sort of time is like kind of as you go further downstream.
It's always changing.
Yeah.
Wind tunnel turbulence.
Yeah.
It's a slightly different setup.
Yeah. The thing that
you're going further and further away from the excitation.
Yeah.
Right, and then the instability is built up to.
So it's sort of like an initial value problem there that you've sort of put a pile in at here x equals
like
zero. More like decaying
turbulence.
Yeah.
Right.
But of course, don't forget, decaying turbulence behaves like forced turbulence if you put enough in. Okay? For a long while, it's like a long transient. It looks like Kolmogorov for a long while, and then it suddenly realizes that it's
well,
not.
That's what I'm saying, but that's why.
Yeah.
But you're saying that you're setting up a different case, and you're looking at the transients.
Yes. I'm now looking at the transients
right.
here.
Right.
No, but the transient has the property that it'll behave in one way for a time up to T star. Okay? And then once you hit infinity, now this doesn't describe it. Now I need another front which propagates back up into this.
But the question is, can you illuminate the situation which is more like the one that occurs in the wind tunnel, which is the buildup.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Right.
I don't.
You might be able to considerations.
It'd be hard. The
other one is very, very hard.
The difficulty.
I don't think the other one you can ever measure.
The difficulty is with measurements. Is it happens so fast? The Kolmogorov spectrum sets up extraordinarily quickly.
Yeah. Well, you have very high density in the wind tunnels.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Because they always say you have to go
Well, okay. Here's if you know somebody with a wind tunnel handy.
You sure
do. Okay, you do. You know someone.
You know somebody with a wind tunnel.
Okay.
Yes, I do know.
Then
he sure does.
Then what can he? Can he actually?
Just tell him on the meeting.
Can he pick out? Certain scales, yes, I suppose he can. He can filter, right? Okay. So then, what I would suggest that what he does is filters a band here away from where the viscosity is going to come in, and away from the wet mesh size. Okay. And he wants to filter a band here and look at the spectrum in this band. And then what it should do is he will find it slowly rising.
As a function of distance.
As a function of distance.
Yeah, I have to ask him. I mean, the people that do wind tunnel experiments should.
Yeah.
You know, this must be measured already. Somebody must have measured it.
Yeah.
No, but you're saying you can turn this into a prediction about the steady state as a function of distance.
Yes.
The length of the plastic.
Yeah,
length
roughly.
Time,
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
Wash downstream, and then so it illustrates the problem.
Yeah. As long as there's enough energy put in from here that everybody down here thinks he's been forced.
Well,
okay.
But I think what one should be able to say precisely, you know, given a certain size, given a certain Reynolds, exactly where to look and how much energy.
Well, it might depend on.
Well, like I say, I would try and look in, if he can define an inertial range, and I'm sure he has a sense of what that is.
So they have R lambda. So what they do in the wind tunnel, the problem is that you can, they have R lambda 1000, which can already flat wind. So
right.
That's an inertial range.
Yeah. So that's like a Reynolds number of a million. That's like a Reynolds number of a million. So that's good enough. So you've many decades. So sort of go in between and then look and see. Yes. It should slowly get less steep.
Or look at two regions.
Or two regions.
Oh, the whole thing.
Yes, two regions would be good because you should also see it. It should, the message, as it were, should come up from the bottom.
Where the inertial range is large enough to see that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Great.
So I think there's